Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Hello and welcome to Best Interest of the Family Radio. I'm the producer, Dave Taylor, and I'm always pleased to be joined by Larry Heron, the parent coach. Hey, Larry.
Hey, Dave. Good evening, sir. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. Again, I want to remind all our listeners that, you know, again, I don't want to insult you, but I always compare you to Dr. Phil. But I do it in a way. I say Dr. Phil on steroids. You know,
Dr. Phil on steroids. So, you know, Dave.
And
I think
Dr. Phil. So
I think Dr. Phil. I think he may be on steroids. I think there may be more truth to that statement than you know.
Well, hey, he's in Hollywood. You never know. Maybe we can get you in Hollywood someday. But, hey, I know that apparently you're going to be going after some pigs on steroids soon, all right?
Well, let's hope they're not on steroids. I don't need any extra challenges. But, yeah, Dave, DJ and I, we've been traveling all over the darn place this summer. It's always exciting to travel with my son. I absolutely value that, and I think he does too. We just got back, as you know, from seeing our good buddy down there, Bob Fox, in New Orleans. And I forgot the battle cry already. Forgive me, New Orleans. It's the French word for let the good times roll. If DJ was here with us, he knows that by heart. And LeBlanc something or other. But anyway, we went down there.
We do in Indiana. We just say pass another Budweiser. But go ahead.
Yeah, I got a feeling there's a there's a few of them Louisianans and Hoosiers that are on the same page in that one. But, yeah,
sure.
DJ and I had a phenomenal time down there with the Foxes, and we did something a little different this year. We didn't spend but less than 24 hours in New Orleans, and we were on our way up to Cajun country, somewhere between Baton Rouge and Lafayette, and staying in a state park in a little cabin that five-star accommodations in the cabin, Dave, but on each side of the cabin was the wilds of the Louisiana swamp. We were in a cove where the alligators, it was a fishing expedition, and the alligators came right up to your deck, which thankfully was on stilts, and begged like dogs for food. It was amazing. And on the other side, there was nothing but swamp with all kinds of crazy critters. We were actually driving down the road, and armadillos came from out of nowhere. We were trying to show DJ the armadillo, and Bob opened the door, and the darn thing tried to get in the car. I couldn't believe it. And then after that, we went to an alligator ranch another day, and DJ got to handle alligators. I got a picture of us with one in my lap, literally.
I saw that.
Oh, my gosh. That was wild, and thankfully the mouth was taped shut. But those claws on the thing are lethal enough, my gosh. And it was truly an amazing trip. But next Tuesday, we're going to have another amazing trip. We're going down to see another one of my best and childhood, one of my oldest friends. And if he was listening in, he has joined us from Texas before. The original Ed McMahon, that's his real name. And if he was listening in, I'd tease him that, in fact, he is my oldest friend, Dave. He's not only have I known him for 47 years, and we've been just the closest of friends for all 47 of those years, but he's old, too. He's one of the few that are older than me, so I got to give him some grief about that. But we're going to go down there and enjoy some Western Texas hospitality, and we're going to do a little wild pig hunting, Dave. I've never done that. And I am excited. I'm looking forward to it. And if I'm lucky enough to get one, Dave, I'll save you a piece of hog. I'm hearing it's pretty good eating, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it sounds like a great time. I've never hunted for hog, but I'm sure that'll be an experience that you and DJ will not forget very soon.
That's a fact. And of course, we're going to have to keep DJ at bay a little bit. I don't think I want him anywhere near the actual hunt, and he'll be kicking and screaming, I can assure you, because Dave, I don't know if I should admit it on the air or not, but I have to be honest, the darn kid can outshoot me with that BB gun. I gave him mine that my dad gave to me, and it was all good, Dave. It was all perfect until the little bugger outshot me from 20 yards. I'll tell you, he's a natural. He's something else.
Eagle Eye Devin, buddy.
Yeah, I'll tell you what.
Hey, Watts, we've got another individual that's you know, falls into that category too. You know, we've got a top notch family law attorney, personal friend, and advocate, and associate, Michael Thomas, on tonight. Very excited about talking about the best interest of the child, you know, factors on here on best interest of the family, because I think you know how I feel, Larry, about the best interest of the child factors, these subjective standards that families and specifically parents are graded on. And while I see the relevancy in at least pointing out that these are factors that children need, I honestly don't feel that parents should be subjected to standards by a third party. What do you think?
Well, my concern again, Dave, is the process that the court takes from the very get start, the very nature of that type of a situation being graded out in a court of law. Family matters don't belong in law. They belong in education. They belong in a process by which children can maintain connection, honest and real connection, to each of their parents. And when you take those 12 factors and you create a competition, now the courts, of course, would argue they don't create the competition, the parents do, and to some degree they're right. But the fact of the matter is that the process is used as a competition that the courts bless, and to the winner, oftentimes, unless you got thousands of dollars to defend yourself as a parent, to create a parental role or maintain one, unless you got it, to the winner goes the primary parenting role, to the loser goes a visitor, and to the children goes a lost parent. Because quite honestly, if you get the cookie cutter result of every other weekend and Wednesday nights for dinner and sometimes even less, you've truly taken a parent out of the mix. You've disenfranchised them in that role. And there's just nothing right about that. There's truly not.
No, and you've disenfranchised the children, you know, at the same time. And I like how you put that, because if, you know, if someone has to defend, you know, their natural right,
right,
I've got real issue with that, you know.
I agree.
You know, and of course, you and I both, you know, strongly understand the aspect that if there is a serious deficiency, if there's drug abuse, if there's physical abuse, serious issues occurring with one parent or the other or both, you know, those issues need to be dealt with. They need to be righted.
No question.
Certainly, there also needs to be a mind of putting it back together, you know, to reunite the children with the natural parents. It's just the right thing to do. And many times,
right,
unfortunately, what we see is, you know, we see a campaign to keep the parents at bay. And ultimately, unfortunately, in many instances, I see parental rights terminated, which just appalls me.
Well, quite honestly, Dave, my experience has been that a good deal of what goes into that is just the court's unwillingness and inability to deal with it, and they don't want to deal with it. And kind of like jail, out of sight, out of mind, but it's really not. The problems continue, and we as society deal with those issues. And you know, the court has got to do a better job at figuring this out. They're not equipped to handle conflict, and they just want the case to go away. So you don't always get the court's best efforts in those cases, which is why I think they're tending to go more to mediation and arbitration and parenting time coordinators and therapists, because quite honestly, they can't deal with it in a court of law. The system
sure
is really not equipped to do it.
Sure, but you know, if they're going to do that, they certainly need to streamline the process. You know, too many experts can really cause, with all due respect to those out there like yourself, that really, but truly need to understand what their job is with families, not interject their own personal biases and things of that order. That's where I have difference with it. But there are a lot of really good-hearted professionals out there, again, like yourself, Larry, that really want to do the right thing by families. They really want to find out what the dynamics are that are occurring, and they really do want the children to properly and lovingly interact with, you know, mom and dad. You know, where I differ with some of this is where they, you know, where a primary parent is designated and there's a visitor, you know, designated in the children's lives. That paradigm has to stop. It just has to stop. But
I agree. And
what,
if you talk to most kids, they would tell you the same thing. They really don't want a visitor for a mom or a dad. They want a parent.
Well, and you know what? In talking about kids, we've got a young man that has expressed that he wants to make his debut on radio today. And it happens to be the son of our special guest tonight. But I want to, if it's okay with our special guest, I'd like to introduce Joe Thomas and his debut to Best Interest of the Family Radio. So good evening, Joe, and welcome to Best Interest of the Family Radio.
Hang on. Joe's ready to be introduced. Joe, you just introduced?
Bring him on. Tell us again, Joe. Hey, Joe? Children need both parents? That's a good message. Now tell us where you got that message at.
My bracelet.
Your bracelet? You got a bracelet that says that?
I have three.
You got three? I'll tell you what, can you talk closer to the microphone?
Yeah.
I know you're on a phone. But if you could talk closer to the phone, that'd be great, buddy. So what kind of sports are you doing, Joe?
What sports?
We've got a really bad connection here. Are you hearing the same thing, Larry?
I can barely hear Joe, and I've talked to Joe in person. I know he's got a strong, articulate voice. And thank God we're not on TV, Dave, because he'd blow us all out of the water. That's
oh,
a
yeah, he's
there.
A handsome guy.
He's
hey,
a Hollywood stud.
Well, and I'm getting some messages on the board, too. Everybody else is getting the same thing. We're not getting very good audio here, Mike.
Oh, he thinks.
Hey, Mike?
Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you now, Mike. We couldn't hear Joe.
Oh, you okay.
You want to try it again?
What's that? What were you asking, Joe?
Yeah, put Joe on the line.
Okay, hang on. Is this
work, Dad? He had a practice run at it.
Okay. Hello?
Hey,
that's
Joe.
Better.
Hey, we're going to let you try this again because we had a bad connection. Hey, Joe, tell us what you said.
Kids need both parents.
Kids need both parents. And why do kids need both parents, Joe?
Probably... because they need from both. They can't have just one because that's hard for the kid's life.
Yeah, and probably because the kid loves both parents.
Yep.
Yep. Well, you're a good guy, let me tell you. And Larry said that if we were on TV, it's probably a good thing because you're such a handsome young guy. You would outshine Larry and I. We can't have that. It's our show.
Hey, I got both Andrew and Joe right here, and both of them actually recently, real quick, Joe, tell them, how big was the salmon that you caught last week?
I caught a salmon that was 15 pounds.
15 pounds?
How about you?
I caught a 16-pound salmon.
How was that to pull in?
Hard. I don't want to do it anymore.
All right, guys, take off. Dad's going to finish on the radio.
Hey, thanks for sharing your kids with us. That was great.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Those are the pride and joy in my life right there.
Absolutely. Well, let me start out with this, Michael, because I know that we want to be able to tell our listeners that having you on our show as our family law advisor does not constitute an attorney-client relationship, that this is, only for information only, that we're going to go down, for example, the 12 factors that determine, you know, child custody and what have you. And I'm trying to pull it up right now. What we're looking at is Michigan legislation, which is part of the Child Custody Act, and it's 722-23. the best interest of the child defined is what we're going to be going down. And there are 12 specific factors. But, again, I want to make sure that we're putting in the disclaimer out there that, Mike is only on here to discuss these factors. And if you call in, which you're encouraged to do, if you call into our program at 724-444-7444 at any time, and you press star 8 if you have a question or a comment as it pertains to tonight's program, please feel free, and I'll make sure that you get on the line and you're able to get your question or comment dealt with. So with that said, again, welcome to our program, Michael. Pleased to have you.
Thank you very much.
Let's move down the factors. Let's start with A.
David, before we even begin, an interesting thing. I heard you and Larry talking earlier about not liking creating the competition with these factors. But I've got to say, if we have to have that be the rubric in place, that you really kind of need to understand what you're going into and go into it with a plan. And if you are going into any sort of a prolonged custody fight or that situation, you need to take a hard look at these factors and you need to put together a roadmap for yourself and make a very realistic, honest assessment, factor by factor, and really get a feel for where you think you can prevail on what factors so that you can take an honest, hard look at the situation and see if, A, is this where you want to spend your time and money, and, B, is it in the best interest of your kids to be going forward? And I think only after we take a good, long, hard, critical look at ourselves and the situation can we make that determination.
Sure. What do you got to say about that, Larry?
Well, I think what Mike is ultimately saying is that the factors are the reality of the situation and that you have to deal with it. And as long as you have to deal with it, you better understand what you're dealing with. You better understand how these factors are weighed, how they're used in a court of law. It doesn't make it right, but it is realistic. And in that, this is the way it's done, and this is law. So we all understand that you better have a good attorney. You better have an attorney who's skilled, who understands how to do this, who understands your judge and the kind of evidence that your particular judge wants to hear and uses in a case. Better understand what your history has been and what stages of development your children are in, what your children truly need from both of their parents at this stage of their life. There's a lot of other factors and situations that go into this, how close do the parents live to one another, what's realistic in terms of that distance that you can do. But at the end of the day, and Mike, I want you to just stop me dead in the water if I'm wrong, but I think that you would agree that at the end of the day, nothing, absolutely nothing, trumps a child's need for a close and consistent, in frequency and otherwise, relationship for both of their parents, each of their parents.
I agree, Larry, that each and every child has that need. Where I would, where I start to get scared is every now and then you find a situation where one parent or the other is unfit, unable, or unwilling.
Sure.
But at that point, you need to take a good hard look at the situation as well and say, what's best for my child here? Where does that need fall in relation to what's good for my child?
Right.
So
no question.
There are both sides of that coin.
Well, and even in that coin, Mike, I would argue that doesn't dismiss what the child needs.
It doesn't dismiss the need.
Right. It might dismiss that he's going to get it.
You may ultimately choose how you're going to work towards filling that need
right.
for your child.
No question. You have to figure that out, because maybe what is dismissed in that scenario is the ability to meet that need, to achieve what the child needs in one or the other parent, given that they can't give it. But when they can, it should certainly be understood as a priority.
It should be treated as a priority.
It should
take precedence over just about any other factor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Over just having one bed, over the back and forth, over the school, over the neighborhood, over the other parents' protest because they got their personal issues and they don't want to share, over, you know, all these other factors that get played out and used and manipulated. Bottom line, good parenting recognizes that a child needs both parents equally, and it gives to it. It absolutely gives to it. But absolutely, if a parent is unable to provide it because they're mentally ill and they're not taking their medications, or because they're predators, or they're actively abusing alcohol or drugs, I mean, sure, that has to be addressed, and there has to be safe structure for those children, because obviously, both emotionally and physically, we can't put kids in harm's way. But I think that those cases are far and few between.
They are few and far between. I would agree with that.
Yep.
Well, I'll tell you what, if there's an unwilling parent, Larry, Mike, you don't have to worry about the court system thrown under the bus. I'll be happy to take care of that one personally. You know, because children do need both parents. And I'll tell you what, somebody has to come, you know, to the plate. You know, when you're a parent, you got responsibilities, you know. So, you know, you make them, you know, you raise them. And, you know, otherwise the state's going to raise them. And I'll be honest with you, and I know I've said this before, I don't think the state makes a very good parent.
Agreed.
So,
agreed.
Now, are we ready to roll into these 12 factors? We're ready to start out with, we've already kind of talked about it, but the love, affection, and emotional ties existing between the parties involved and the child, that's factor A. And I know that falls kind of in your lap, Larry, but I know that talking earlier, you know, Michael Thomas had some comments as it pertains to factor A.
Well, you know, Dave, the factor A, it's certainly something that I understand and I can tell you from a clinical perspective. But I think what, again, the benefit, quite honestly, the beauty that we have tonight is Mike Thomas, who is an expert in how the court views that, how that gets played out and weighed and understood in a court of law. So regardless of what I understand as a clinician, I think what litigants and parents have to understand is how and what the court is looking for in those situations. And Mike, tell us, what is that about?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's important to realize that when these investigations are being done, especially at the friend of the court level, you've got a bunch of different personalities, a bunch of different people with a bunch of different mindsets that are conducting these investigations. So you really need to know who you're dancing for when this is going on. However, some key things to look at is this, number one, is looking at the mutuality of the relationship. This isn't, as a father or a mother, are you willing to love and show affection to your child? Are you capable of it? But what are you doing? And is there a response from the child? You could love your child all you want, but I don't think you're going to prevail if you walk in the door and the kid is scared to death of you and runs away. This is looking at the mutuality of the relationship. What sorts of things do you do to show this? Do you have routines where you're tucking the child in to bed every night? Do you spend time together every morning before breakfast to give them a pep talk on the day? Do you find out at the end of the day how the day went? If the child gets hurt, does the child come to you for solace and consolation? Does the child come to you to share triumphs and achievements? Does the child come to you to get consoled when something didn't quite work out? These are the sorts of things that they're looking at here. But typically, when I'm looking at a case, I will tell people that I don't consider this usually to be a factor that's up for grabs in a custody battle. More or less, you are looking to become even on this factor so that you can move into an area where you have a little more chance to gain some edge if you're looking to win a custody battle. I think factor A, more often than not, goes to neither party. And when it does get assessed to one party or the other, it's usually because there's something drastic there. This is what my experience has been.
Makes sense. Because
such as an absent parent who has just jumped back in the mix or something along those lines.
Right. Because what you're ultimately saying is, what sorts of elements of parenting have you participated in to create and maintain that bond, that parent-child attachment and bond that every child needs with both of their parents, but what have you done to contribute to it? And every parent has done something, even if they've been working throughout the marriage. And I know that friend of the court loves to say that, hey, we're not gender biased, we're procedural biased, which means that we side with the parent that has been there doing all the elements of parenting, which is pretty subjective and very unfair in that, you know, if a dad, for example, has been, for whatever reason, whether he's agreed to it, whether he's wanted to, or whether it was just an agreement in marriage that, look, I'm going to work 60 hours, 70 hours, and you're going to take care of the kids at home. But if he's showing up at home every night, if he's not, you know, after that 12-hour day chasing skirt at the bar or turned into an alcoholic where he just doesn't have anything to do with his kids in the marriage, and he shows up, he's part of that element. He's part of that dynamic. And it very well may be that in that marriage, the kids were missing those factors. They were hungry for them, and they continue to be hungry for them. It may be that, in fact, even if he was out doing something different and certainly unethical, that yet his children are still hungering for his attention, his affection, for his connection. And if we're truly looking at what a man or a woman is willing to step up and do, we have to also look at what children then are seeking from that parent. My experience as a therapist has been that when a parent steps up to the plate and they're sincere about wanting to fill for their children what their children need in a parent, it's a very rare occasion that a child doesn't welcome that opportunity. They need it. They want it, particularly if they have been missing it. You still there?
I'm here.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I didn't mean to lull you guys to sleep.
No.
We were waiting to see if you finished your nuggets of wisdom there. We didn't want to interrupt you. You know, when we've got Dr. Larry on, you know, we don't want to mess with that.
You are too kind.
But so are we ready to run on to the second factor? Because I didn't want to, I didn't want to be premature on that. So, you know, we've gone over the emotional ties and love and affection, which is factor A. Factor B, the capacity and disposition of the parties involved to give the child love, affection, and guidance, and continue the education raising of. Now, this kind of, you guys already kind of talked about this to a degree. I know you did, Larry.
Well, not really. I mean, Mike, that, it's a little bit of a different slant, isn't it? I mean, in terms of the court size?
It's a little bit different of a slant, but again, we're looking at both the willingness and the ability. You know, you've got to be willing to do the job, number one. And number two, there's now you start getting into a little bit more of an objective scale to some degree. Mm-hmm. Because you've got this, you've got the love and affection that we've talked about a little bit in the prior, but now we're also looking at guidance, continue the education, raising the child in his or her religion or creed, if any. You've got a little bit more of an objective scale to look at, because if you have been primarily responsible for this child, but the child doesn't go to school, the child does not get to school on time, is not performing, if the child is in catechism and you know, you don't support it, and the child never goes to class. Now we're talking a little bit about an objective scale that we can look at to, I hate to say grade, but to grade the parents. And this is a factor that certainly can be won in a custody battle on those by utilizing some of those objective items. Also, we're looking at the guidance aspect of that, and that's where, you know, how are you disciplining your child? Do you have the capacity to provide guidance and discipline for the child where you're doing it in a constructive manner that the child is responding to? as opposed to my child does wrong, I scream and yell, and we each go our separate ways, and the problem dissipates. That's, you know, that's going to be looked at a lot more critically than the parent who can sit the child down, get on the child's level, and talk through a problem and correct the behavior. So that's those are my thoughts on that factor.
Sure, sure. And what you're, again, talking about is very concrete, measurable kinds of elements of parenting that at least can be observed. And,
concrete and measurable, Larry, means can be won. That factor,
right,
you can put some stock in it.
Right, right.
I got a question for our attorney, though. I know that you take your kids to church, Mike, and I know that I do, and I know that Larry takes DJ to church. What if you have a situation, what's been your experience when you have a parent who strongly believes in religious upbringing and the other parent doesn't think much of it? I mean, since this is a factor, is this strongly weighed in the direction of the parent who, takes the child to church or has a religious education?
My experience is that it's not strongly weighed, but it is a factor within the factor that if the child has been raised with a certain religious upbringing,
mm-hmm,
has been consistently going to church, and then one parent just does not do that, especially if the child is old enough to express an interest in church, that certainly can be enough to sway this factor to the other parent.
Sure. Yeah, let's say that they have an appreciation for the Sunday school at the church or other activities. Sure.
Matter of fact, my recollection is there was some case law where one parent actually stopped going to church but allowed the child to go with the step-parent at the time. And the other parent didn't go at all, but the one encouraged it and allowed it was enough, once again, to sway that factor.
So in that particular instance, for example, did the child that was going with the step-parent, did that child then start attending church either with the parent who may have gotten right and gotten some religion all of a sudden in the household?
No, that child had been used to going to church, and then the parent stopped going.
Yeah.
The child still sought the religious interaction for comfort and guidance, you know.
Okay, is that did the other parent come to the plate and say, hey, you know, I'm going to provide this and I need the court to support me on this?
Well, no, it was one factor among many in a custody fight, Dave, that was going on, but, when they came to this factor and looked at it, one parent didn't go to church at all and provided no religious avenue for the child. The other allowed the child to continue in the religious upbringing that he'd experienced. Just he didn't go, but he still allowed the child to participate,
mm-hmm,
and it came out in his favor.
So, Mike, does the courts consider, let's say it's, does the courts consider what a child's interests are? And then weigh that against how willing a parent is to give to them, or is religion just somehow taking precedence over like Boy Scouts or football or karate or some other interest that the child is in that one parent is willing to give to and the other parent isn't?
Well, I think it goes to the decision making of the parents that if there's been a concrete decision made that we're going to raise a child in this religion and we're moving forward with that and the child has started that, who's going to foster that along and continue it is where I believe where the line is drawn.
Gotcha. Okay.
Well, let's go into C. Interestingly enough, I always find the way that they have these worded, capacity and disposition. Okay, the capacity and disposition of the parties involved to provide the child with food, clothing, medical care, or other remedial care recognized and permitted under the laws of the state and of medical care and other material needs. What is meant by permitted under the law? I'm curious about that. What's going on with that?
Well, that's an interesting factor because, again, capacity and disposition. So you could be, there could be a huge disparity in income with these, with a couple. And, you know, for a given example, say mom earns $150,000 a year and dad earns $10,000. But mom won't put any of her income towards this child, towards the child's needs. It's got to be about the willingness as well. If she has shown that, you know what, I'd rather spend my money on a boyfriend, or dad says, I'm going to spend my money on a girlfriend, and the child still is getting, you know, coming up short, the parent who's earning $10,000 a year can come out from behind on this. And you also need to look at the fact that incomes are going to be counterbalanced by child support. You know, maybe one parent, so it's not only about the income that you're bringing in, but at the end of the day, who's got what and where are they spending? Does that make sense?
So you mean that when the court is weighing this factor, are you saying, Mike, that it's also weighing where's the money being channeled to, and what is a parent willing to do with that money?
Right. If you're supporting someone else as opposed to supporting your child, that's going to be found against you. If you have, you know, a live-in mate that you're footing the bills for and your child is going without, I don't care how much money you make, you're not going to prevail on that factor.
Right, right.
At the same time, if you're the parent who's making a grossly inadequate income and compared to the other parent, we're going to look at what the child support would be or is and put that into perspective on what is this parent doing for the child.
Well, and many times that parent is the same. They're making, they're not making a whole lot of money, but they're the, you know, the paying parent,
right?
You know, and it's unfortunate because they see this, you know, way too often, and it really puts them in a difficult position financially, and then, you know, they want to be able to provide for additional things for their children, and you know, it's really tough on them. You know, they can't take them to those additional activities or even to a movie, you know.
Right, but that's where having your support paid current, if possible, is important. And also we're going to look at people's employment history. You know, do they have a spotty employment history, or do they look like they're going to continue earning at a stable level? Is this the parent that's a little more stable in their employment? Is this someone who's, you know, right in the middle of a brand new job and, you know, this may drop off in 6 weeks? You know, there's a lot of different factors to look at with regards to factor C. But it's not just at the end of the day who earns what.
And you're probably seeing a lot more, at least I'm seeing it, I'm seeing a lot more folks that are going to the front of the court system and saying, you know what, you know, here in Michigan, you know, we're suffering from the economically. And so I know that there's a lot of people that are going to have modifications done to their child support. So
they're flooded with modifications right now.
Well, it's got to be massive. So how is their courts responding to that, Mike? Is there a lot of resistance? Are there still imputments going on? I mean,
see as much imputation of income, and I do see people being able to get the necessary reductions in support as those issues come up.
Mm-hmm. Well,
over the past couple of years, I've gotten much more understanding about what this economy in Michigan has been like.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing, and kind of what I'm thinking is that, well, what if you have a long period of time where you were paying the child support, and then because of the economic woes that we're having, and you're self-employed, and you go in there and you say, well, you know, look, I was paying the child support, you know, right along, without any issues, and then, you know, within the last 3 or 4 months, I've been falling behind. I just don't have the money, you know. And so how do they view that? Are they going to look back at the history and give you, you know, some good marks for that and have an understanding that the economy is in the tank right now?
Certainly, if you've been paying right along, that's going to play in your favor. And then at that point, obviously, the burden of proof is on you, though, to show that, look, my business has dropped off. Everybody appears, at least on the surface, to be quite understanding of the fact that we just don't have the economy we had. And the good side of that and the good side of the courts being understanding right now is that they are granting reductions in support. The double-edged sword is that it appears it's gotten a little more likely for change of domiciles as people leave the state to seek other employment. But I guess that's a whole other topic for another evening.
Well, and we're ready to go on to the next factor. This would be, are we on factor C now? Is that where we're at?
D.
I'm sorry?
D.
Oh, but we're moving on to D? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, well, bear with me a moment. Okay. Because I've got some technical issues on this side that just keep coming up. It's fun producing this program sometimes. Let me tell you, it's like juggling cats. Okay.
You sound like you speak from experience, Dave. Have you juggled a cat or two?
Well, I've got enough animals around here, I could probably juggle a few different things at once. Between the bird, the chihuahuas, the cat, the gerbil, and that's just half the list at the Taylor Zoo. But, okay, factor D, the length of time the child has lived in a stable, satisfactory environment and the desirability of maintaining continuity. So tell us, Attorney Michael Thomas, what the heck does that mean?
Well, I think the important thing to note there is that frequent moves by themselves don't automatically demonstrate a lack of a stable environment. There's situations where people are making positive moves, where, you know, maybe we're moving because we're looking to get into a better school district. Maybe we're moving because, you know, times are good and we're able to get a better house. We're able to provide a better living environment for the child. Those moves make sense. I think where people are concerned are if someone's moved, you know, several times in a short time period, they've been in and out of relationships with people that are, you know, cohabitating with them, maybe married and divorced. And these things are upsetting the apple cart for the child as far as the stability of the environment. The flip side is we may have what you would look at and say, this is an extremely stable environment. The child has been living in the same house for 6 years. Mom has consistently been working. She comes home and gets drunk every single night, or dad for that matter. And the child's left on his own to raise himself. That's stable. That environment's not changing, but is there any desire to maintain it? And I think the answer would always be no. So those are the two flip sides that you need to look at. A consistent environment isn't always desirable, and just because some things are changing doesn't mean you lose that factor.
A very good point.
Well, is that to say that if you're in the marital home, whether you're the mom or the dad, that strengthens your position in this?
I don't think that necessarily needs to strengthen the position. I think it can if you are approaching this from a point of weakness. But if you're approaching the home environment from a position of strength, I don't think whether or not you've stayed in the marital home or not is going to play into that so much, because the courts understand somebody has to move, you know? But what have you built for your child upon moving is the question. And if you are, as you are moving, what's the impact it has on the child?
Mm-hmm.
Are you building a nice home for the child? Does the child have a room of his own? Are they in a, you know, nice neighborhood? Are they in with a good school district? What have you built?
Now, Mike, what if one or the other parent, let's say one parent stays, you know, in a stable environment, they stay, let's not call it a stable environment, let's just say that they stay at one residence, they stay at one address, okay, they never move, let's say over the course of, you know, I don't know, 6-7 years, okay, and then the other parent has moved numerous times, once a year, you know, for all kinds of different reasons. Basically, in the same, they're staying in the same school district, for example. How does the court system look at that? Are they looking at that as a stable or unstable situation?
Well, you know, from the surface, it appear stable. What's going on the home, though, will tell you if that's a stable environment that we desire to continue. Does that make sense, Dave, or no?
Well, would the court system, for example, would they ask why there were so many moves?
Well, certainly they're going to ask why, because I would assume you're going to have the other side saying, look, they've moved four times.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's going to be incumbent on the parent who's moved to show what are the reasons they've moved, what have been the effects on the child, and how is this advantageous? Because, again, four moves in a short time period could be extremely advantageous to the child. We never know what life throws at us, you know?
Well, I think it goes without saying, and I think Larry would support this, that certainly children need consistency, and they need to know, to a greater than lesser degree, where their bedroom is. it's one thing to, children are pretty resilient, and certainly, going from mom's dad's house or occasionally over to grandma's house is not an issue. Children can reason with that. But I have to wonder, changing residence once a year, or once every 6 months or whatever it may be, what that does to kids. Can you speak to that, Larry?
Well, absolutely, Dave, and I think Mike has. I think what Mike is saying is that when you move a child, what sort of an impact is it going to have on him?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the neighborhood wasn't the greatest, but the fact of the matter is that he has a very healthy, stable relationship with most of the neighborhood and with the school and the teachers and his peers. Maybe, in fact, he's been there for 13 years. And he's getting ready to graduate out of middle school and go to the high school where the bulk of his friends are going. On the other hand, maybe not. Maybe they're 2 years old. Maybe they're 4 years old. They haven't had opportunity really to attach to that neighborhood and to all that it entails. What kind of an impact is it going to have by moving that child from one residency to the other? But the other thing is, and Mike, I think you can speak to this, and I tell me if I'm wrong here, but I think what the court ultimately looks at and has to look at is, will the move impact the ability for that child to continue at the very least, same sort of consistent and healthy interaction and connection and time spent with that other parent? If that parent moves, for example, 40 miles away, and now 2-3 years later they want to move 35 more miles, and that parent is showing up, that parent has been involved in school, has been involved in interaction, has stayed consistent with their parenting time, doesn't the court kind of weigh some of that in terms of what is that going to do to the relationship and the time spent with that other parent?
Well, I think that has to be weighed, Larry. I think that most definitely has to be weighed.
Absolutely, absolutely. But, I mean, what I'm asking is it your experience that the court, in fact, does prioritize that?
Certainly. Like anything else, it needs to be brought up. It needs to be brought to the investigator's attention or the court's attention.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, it's dealt with.
Because I think that in a lot of these moves, sad, but I think that a lot of times parents don't consider that. I think that you and I have both seen that, where the fact of the matter is the parent is trying to take the bulk of the time with that child and move them out of state or move them 100 miles away or even 40, 50 miles away without any regard for how that's going to affect their ability to continue to spend time with that other parent. Fact of the matter is, again, as we've talked about on several occasions, there's nothing, not a better house, not a different school, not one room, nothing trumps the need that a child has for a whole and complete relationship with both of their parents. Nothing. The need for relationship with both of those parents, a complete relationship, a child-parent relationship, that's healthy, of course, but that need, there's nothing that trumps it. And when you disrupt that, not only is it bad parenting, it can be very, very scarring to a child. And I'd like to see the courts even take more care, if you will, and making sure that a parent-child relationship is preserved. Because quite frankly, I think that a lot of times parents get a little seedy around that, if you will, and they really don't understand the impact that they're making on their kids. And, you know, the courts, I think, still far too often. I think they've done a better job at it than they used to, but still far too often. They allow for that to take seed and to be played out. And then what you've done is you've disenfranchised a parent's role. Because the fact of the matter is, and I know you guys understand, it absolutely requires an element of time, a quantity of time, to support a quality of parenting and to authenticate a parental role every other weekend or, you know, 1 week in a month because now your kid is 150 miles away is not a parental role. That's a long-distance relationship. It is not the kind of authentic parental role that every child needs.
Well, I'll tell you what. I know that Mike expressed that he wanted to be able to, get off of here about 9 o'clock. So we want to respect that because I know that he's there with his boys and stuff. So let's, we've got a pretty good broadcast going here. We've got, you know, up to 4 factors. We can come back and visit this another time with Mike. And, certainly want to appreciate Mike for coming. You know, Mike, thanks for coming on tonight. And,
my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me, guys.
Yeah, there's a lot of value in this discussion. And, you know, we'll come back at another broadcast. We don't know if it'll be next week or another week, but, you know, certainly want to revisit this, when you can be available.
And Dave,
I want to let our listeners know, though, that this is going to be a special segment that, that was actually originally facilitated by one of our listeners on the board, John Langlois, who's also been instrumental in supporting our program through some website development and some other things. And so I encourage you folks to go to longnecksolutions.com, which is his business, if you have any needs in the area of internet technology or domains and what have you. And also need to mention the fact that this program has been specifically brought to you by Dads and Moms of Michigan. And you can find out about Dads and Moms of Michigan by going to dadsandmomsofmichigan.org. There's a lot of good things that are brewing with Dads and Moms of Michigan right now. And on a future broadcast, you will be hearing from none other than John Langlois, the operations manager, VP himself, who's going to be telling you about a lot of things that are, on the horizon for Dads and Moms of Michigan and the parents and children of the state of Michigan, for that matter, that are going to be able to benefit from some of the programs that Dads and Moms of Michigan is putting together. So
very
again,
new and exciting
you,
things.
Attorney
indeed.
Michael Thomas for coming on the program.
Hey, Dave, and before we let Mike go, you know, we might ought to share a secret about Mike Thomas that I bet our listening audience doesn't know.
Is Mike still on?
Yeah, he's a little bit nervous with that.
Let her rip.
You know, folks, as good as Michael Thomas is as an attorney, and we highly recommend him. Mike, why don't you throw your information out there? If you if you're in need of a family law attorney, Mike is there, and we greatly value Mike's skill, Mike's passion. Mike's a dad; he understands.
He's a heck of a crook too.
But well, there's the secret right there. What the audience may not know is that if I'm fortunate enough to get one of them wild pigs down there in Texas.
There you go.
That as good as an attorney as Mike Thomas is, he's also a first-rate chef. This is the guy that I would fly down to Texas to barbecue that pig right on up because he is an awesome cook. We've been blessed to experience some of that. And, Mike, I'm looking forward to more of that, buddy.
I think we all are. Summer's about to escape us, so we need to do a little of that, but since you asked, my office number is 248-855-6477. My website is michael-thomas-law.com. And I can also be reached on my cell. I'm available as people need me at 734-612-7121. I'd be more than happy to speak with anybody about any of their legal issues and
certainly I provide a free consultation, and we can go from there. Guys, thank you very, very much for having me on. I will talk to you soon.
Take care, Michael.
Bye-bye.
And I also want to remind our listeners that Dads and Moms of Michigan, again, you go to dadsandmomsofmichigan.org, is going to have another free divorce seminar on Saturday, September the 4th. And that I believe that venue would still be at Bayside.
Dave, I don't mean to cut you off, but I believe that we may be changing that around because the 4th is actually Labor Day weekend. So my last word I got was that it'll probably be the following Saturday. I think my public school math serves me correctly, that'll be Saturday, September the 11th. And as far as the venue goes, we may be changing that up too, but we will let you know, and definitely by our next broadcast.
The important thing is that folks can go to the website and find out the up-to-date information at dadsandmomsofmichigan.org. So while we may not have the up-to-date information on this program tonight, please go to the website where you can get it. And there's also a toll-free number on there and a local number, along with very skilled and knowledgeable folks at the other end of the line. So, please feel free to take advantage of those resources. And while you're at it, you might want to go on there and sign up for their newsletters and notifications. I know that there's no cost associated with that, simply just by putting in your private information. And I know that they don't share that with anyone. I can tell you that for sure. You may even want to become a member. I think it's like $25 to become a member for an entire year. I know that Michael Saxton is a member of Dads and Moms of Michigan, besides the fact he is a PAC organizer for Dads and Moms of Michigan Political Action Committee, and he's always been a big supporter of our program, and we really appreciate him, and we appreciate the other Mike that is on that goes by Magic, and Murray Davis and John Langlois and a number of folks, including my mom, who's a big supporter of our program. So hi, Mom. And, anybody else that I may be forgetting, certainly want to throw those accolades out there and appreciation for all those that support Best Interest of the Family Radio, and especially the aspect of shared parenting and co-parenting. And because the bottom line is, it's not just a mantra that Larry and I came up with. Children do desperately need both parents. They need moms, and they need dads. They need your love and affection. They need your encouragement. And, while we try to articulate this on our program, I want to motivate and activate you parents that you can be and only be the biggest advocate for your children. And, for all intents and purposes, nobody else is going to do it. So you've got to come to the plate for them. And, I know that many that listen to this broadcast, unfortunately, do not have a lot of contact time with their kids. Again, I want to encourage you folks to do everything within your power. If you need a higher power, we all know how to contact him. And, do everything you can to advocate and stay in the lives of your children because they need you. And certainly they need your influence, they need your love, they need to understand where they're from, because it's important, isn't that right, Larry? It's important to know where you're from, isn't it?
Dave, it's of the utmost importance, and my gosh, the way you just articulated all that, I think maybe you're the doctor. We need to start calling you Dr. Taylor.
Well, maybe you could call me Dr. Squirrel, because a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while, so...
Well, the bottom line, Dave,
but
is
I can't
that,
take anything from you, so you go ahead.
The bottom line is it doesn't take a therapist to understand what you just articulated, and that's you're living proof of that. All it takes is a good and caring parent.
A desire.
All it takes,
that's right.
Absolutely. All it takes is a child, and particularly one who's hungry for a parent, who absolutely is experiencing that void in not having one or their other parents involved in their life, and or at least involved to the extent that they need them to be. to understand that when a parent isn't there, it creates a void. And we understand that, and that's why we advocate for what we do. And nobody can create, though, the reforms and the changes that are needed better than we can as parents, as people who say, look, I'm going to step up to the plate. I'm going to be there for my kids. I'm going to be the change that I desire. I think that was Gandhi, Dave. I can't remember exactly, but somebody once said that be the change you seek. And when we can all pull together and do that in harmony, anything is possible.
Be the parent. How's that?
Be the parent. You are the
That's
parent.
Right.
One of your favorite lines that I haven't heard in a long time, Dave.
Don't ask permission. Just
you don't
be
have
the
to
parent.
Ask permission to be your child's parent.
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's right, buddy. With that said, I don't think we can say any more. We'll say thanks again for all of our loyal listeners and downloaders and supporters of Shared Parenting and Biff Radio. And until we see you again, God's blessings.
Good night.